Hi, I'm Jessica Schiller Silverman, and I want to warmly welcome you to the Alive podcast, where wellness and business come to life. I stepped away from a six-figure career in venture capital in San Francisco to start my own venture, all inspired initially from a podcast. Learn how in this powerful show full of golden nuggets that will help you learn how you can come alive in your creative prowess while creating financial and energetic flow. Each episode will uncover my secrets to debunking the starving artist myth. Come on, enjoy the ride and come alive with me. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another episode of the Alive podcast. Today, I am honored to be in conversation with a woman that is a devout part of my morning practice, Asha Frost. Asha Frost is an Indigenous medicine woman, entrepreneur, and a member of the Chippewas of the Nawash First Nation. She is the best-selling author of You Are the Medicine and The Oracle, the Sacred Medicine Oracle Deck. She has guided thousands of people through profound and lasting transformation. As a highly sought-after speaker, we are honored to have her here today, Asha leads from her clan teachings of the Crane, holding space from vision and heart. Asha has blended her life experience in her work as a homeopath, energy healer, and mentor with her innate gifts and the wisdom of her ancestors. She loves sharing her medicine in powerful ways through ceremonies, teachings, and speaking events. Through this work, she loves seeing people reclaim their roots, find their healing wisdom, and rise into their power. Welcome, Asha, to the Alive podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's quite an honor. So I want to open this episode with the question. Those of you listeners who have been listening for a while, you know the MO. Who is Asha Frost?
Oh, goodness. That's interesting. I'm a mother. I'm a friend. I'm the daughter of Brenda Najewan and Larry Frost. I am someone who has connected deeply to her own healing path and then has had this wisdom kind of come forward from that path. And that's all I want to say right now, I think.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. So let's talk a bit about your healing path and sort of where, right, the name of your book, You Are the Medicine, the Sacred Medicine Deck. You are an Indigenous medicine woman yourself. But where would you say your healing journey truly began?
I think it began when I was diagnosed with lupus when I was 17. And at that time, I was pretty disconnected to the teachings of my ancestors, as I had grown up in a very assimilated way in a very white town. And I hadn't really thought about, I guess, those teachings a lot because I tried to sort of distance myself from them. So when I was 17, I was diagnosed and I was given medication. And the medication just caused side effects. Then I had to look at an alternative way. So I went to a naturopath and I had the privilege of doing that. And I reconnected to plants and a different way of healing myself. And that just opened me up to reconnecting to all parts of myself, my ancestors included, and all the teachings that had been stripped away or broken apart by colonization and residential school trauma. So it's been a path of reclamation ever since.
Wow, it's really beautiful. And ancestral trauma is a big part of this podcast, healing inner child and ancestral trauma. And thank you for bringing to light your own sort of journey with colonization and the tribal wisdom that you learned from your ancestry. What would you say impacted you the most when it comes to your ancestral trauma? What did you learn kind of along the journey that might have been suppressed for so many years, right? As a child, and that's sort of my own journey, I didn't know a lot of the trauma in my lineage. When did this really come to light for you?
It actually wasn't that long ago. Residential school history hasn't been in the mainstream media until very recently. So even in my own familial history, it wasn't talked about a lot. So I knew that my grandparents had gone to residential school, but it wasn't really spoken about in this way. So that was very buried. And it wasn't until I had my own children And I saw the impact of the generational trauma and harm that was being expressed by them, that I really started to see, oh my goodness, this goes really deep. And I need to do some healing work around this so that they don't experience what I've experienced in my life. And they can come home to claiming their indigeneity in a proud way and stand tall in that. And also learn the medicines without the blockages and barriers that I have.
Wow, that's really beautiful. And what is something that, just one thing that comes to light that you want to instill in your children or that you have in sort of the claiming their indigenization?
I think for me, it's like, I see them standing with pride of their indigenous selves. I don't see that same fear of who they are or that narrative of being invisible or those parts of themselves that feel ashamed or feel not good enough or not worthy for being indigenous. They don't seem to carry that. And I really hope that that stays with them for the rest of their lives. So I do feel like a lot of the healing work I've done myself has created a clear path for them to claim their indigeneity and stand tall with it. And my eldest is like, he does, you know, speeches for his school on Truth and Reconciliation Day or on National Indigenous Day. He's doing a little talk. And I'm so proud of him. And I would never have done that at that age. So I can see how that healing has really transferred down to them.
So how did you feel as a child, you know, kind of talking now about your children and sort of looking back, how did you feel? And you mentioned you wouldn't have done that, right? You wouldn't have felt the courage to sort of speak out and give a speech and really feel that sense of pride.
Yeah, I think that there was this inherent deep part of me that somehow knew that being Indigenous wasn't good. It wasn't good. It was, you know, we were called dirty Indians. It was so racist back in the 80s. So the narrative around being Indigenous was all of that. And I didn't want anything to do with that. I didn't want to be those things. So I would receive gifts like beaded earrings or beaded watches or things like that. And I would just hide them away. I'd stuff them away because I thought, I don't want to be different. I don't want to be this. And it was subtle, right? It was just these feelings of, it was just the feelings of the collective energy that got inside, or even the ancestral intergenerational trauma energy that was already there, that I just had a knowing that this is something I didn't want to be. So that was how I felt. And I grew up in the only Indigenous people at my school were two of my cousins, mm-hmm. my sister. So I grew up in a really non-diverse town, and assimilation just felt like the safest choice.
Yeah. And I think so many of you listening can really resonate, whether you're Indigenous or just have felt, I mean, like myself, suppressed and silenced. My entire life, that feeling of just not having the courage to truly be yourself. And so, of course, the natural human course of action is to assimilate, right? And to try to be like everyone else, so you don't necessarily stick out or to hide. It gave me goosebumps when you said you had to hide your beaded jewelry away, because I don't know if I have this in a past life, but I have always felt so, since I was a young age, connected to Indigenous culture. I always had my hair in sort of two pigtails, and I chose to present, you know, a Native American Sacagawea and sort of American history as a child. Like, I always just resonated, even as we traveled, you know, to the West Coast, to like New Mexico and Arizona, and we visited some of the ancient ruins and the lands. Like, I just remember as a child, like that feeling of like aliveness, that I felt connected to that land. I felt connected to that tradition in some way, even though it really wasn't a part of my lineage, but I just felt the resonance. And that's, I think, why a lot of your work just truly speaks to my heart. Maybe I was, you know, part of a nation in a past life. I definitely don't discount that. Yeah. So what have you learned, would you say, from your lineage? What traditions do you carry? What sort of mantras? What, right? Because trauma, as you mentioned, you have beautifully broken the cycle with your children. It travels right up to seven generations. But we also carry things back, right, from seven generations past.
Well, a lot of the traditions and medicines have been taken away. So a lot of them have been broken. A lot of them have been oppressed. A lot of them have been illegal for us to practice. So I wish I could say that a lot of these things have been passed down to me directly from my family or from my elders, but that just wasn't the case. And this is why it's so important, I think, as we honor Indigenous traditions and teachings and medicines and think, oh my goodness, that's something I want to have or I want to use or I want to connect with, that we remember that Indigenous people, the reason why it's so harmful to extract from Indigenous teachings and medicines is because of that reason, because it was taken from us and we weren't even allowed to speak our own language anymore or to share in our traditional ways or to live our culture. So when you come from that place and then you see other traditions reclaiming these medicines in these ways, it just causes so much harm. So I wanted to start there. I think that what I have reclaimed on my journey, it's mostly been from doing my healing work and being on this healing path, and doing things like journeying and paying attention to my dreams and sitting with the land, all these decolonial ways of listening and feeling the ancestral whispers in my blood, listening to how they teach me in my dreams or in my journeys or in my meditations. That's how I've received a lot of this information. And I've had to trust that even though it's been broken and there's been so much trauma and harm, that this is a valid way to reclaim these teachings. Of course, I've learned from different teachers and different elders along the way, but the teachings that have stayed with me the most are the ones that have been revealed when I've been in a lupus flare and I have been doing some healing work, or I've been sitting with a medicine person and wisdom has come forward. So I'd say those are the ways that have really come forward the most.
That's really beautiful. However you're comfortable speaking about this, you mentioned your chronic condition lupus, which really started this whole path. How would you say, and because a lot of listeners do experience chronic conditions as well as myself, the host, how has that led you on a spiritual journey? Or how would you recommend to someone that is currently suffering from a chronic condition to tap into a spiritual practice as a mode of healing?
I think that an illness of any sort opens you up to other worlds. That's what I think. I think that when you're in so much pain in your physical body, you need to tap into your spirit. I think that's where, like, there's a channel or a vehicle for spirit to come in. It's sort of like when you say, you know, the cracks are where the light comes in. That's where I feel about spirit can enter. And you know, I've come to know about myself that I'm not broken and neither are you. And I think that this wellness world can tell us all the time, you need to be fixed. You are broken. I'm going to fix you. I'm going to do this. You're going to heal yourself. I've been on this healing journey since I was 17 and I've learned a lot about myself, and I would not say that I'm cured. I'd say that I keep going through these cycles of flare-ups or illness, and each time along the way I learn something really deep and another part of my soul evolves and another part is reclaimed. That's only, but I can only speak for myself. So I think sometimes it's changing the mindset of seeing what healing is and not shaming yourself or feeling like you have something wrong with you, but rather deepening into, what is the medicine? What is this trying to show me? What is in those shadow parts when I'm not well? What's calling to me to be seen and felt and acknowledged? That's what I've come to learn. Now I'm 46, so it's been almost 30 years of living with this. And I've done all of the things. I've done all the healing modalities and I've tried all of the things to heal myself, but I've come to know that holding myself in the light of compassion and not shaming myself for being broken has been the most powerful lesson.
Those are really powerful words. Thank you again for bringing that to light, because the wellness world does for sure portray this concept, right? That you're broken, right? That you are not okay as you are, that you need to be fixed. And so thank you so much for bringing this beautiful perspective of compassion, you yourself being on the path since the age of 17, right? For almost 30 years now, and really shifting that mindset of healing. Cause I think that's really where the healing begins. I know the program that I'm personally in, it's a lot of brain retraining, because a lot of what happens inside of us, right, especially trauma, right, it is what happens inside of us, not from the outside. That's just a manifestation of what we're moving through within. And so I think it's really beautiful, the inquiry question that you said, right? What is, as you're experiencing, right? What is the medicine, right? What is the shadow really trying to teach me through this? What is calling forth, right, to be revealed from this condition? And I know it's incredibly hard when you're in the middle of that and you're experiencing a lot of pain, but I also love your perspective that pain can be a portal, right? Or the beautiful Rumi quote that you mentioned, right? The wound is the place where the light enters. It's one of my favorite quotes as well. And I think the more we can really open ourselves up to that perspective and the beautiful work that you do, we can use that as a place of not only healing ourselves, but healing others and knowing that we don't need someone to fix us, that we have the power. And that's, again, what I love so much about your message and that I've learned on my healing journey is that I gave my power away to so many practitioners when truly the healing happens within, right? Yeah. The practitioner guides you to a space where you can heal yourself and your openness to that.
Yeah. And I think it's, I think also as we claim that and speak it into the world and live in this way, then the collective ripple happens too. And it's something that I noticed. It just happened yesterday. You know, I posted about my journey with lupus, and no matter how many times I do this, I'm always shocked about the number of messages I get with healing tips or with people wanting to help under the guise of help. And I never asked for help. I was sharing part of my journey. And I think it's really interesting that people are like, well, I've healed lupus, I can heal you. Or have you tried sun gazing? Have you tried this juice? Have you tried it? You know, I think it actually frustrated me yesterday because I was like, I've been on this journey for 30 years. You think I haven't tried everything that I possibly could have tried? So you're also not seeing somebody in their power when you think that you can heal them, or you're not seeing them in their medicine. When you somehow think that you have the answer for them, that they haven't figured out themselves in some way. This is not to say that a guide isn't important or a healer isn't important, but it has to be a mutual, can I please have help? Yes, you can, like a reciprocity. So I think that as we speak about these things more, then perhaps we can change the collective lens of what we see as shadow or dark or needs to be healed, and just stay in our own lane and just, you know, let's do our own healing. And then, yes, if you feel you have a healing heart and somebody asks for your support, then please come together. But yes, it's something that's really raw in my heart today because I've seen it my whole life. And I feel like it reminds me of that colonial trauma of, or like white saviorism, like I'm going to come in and I'm going to save you, or I'm going to like make you what you are not already. And that can be really re-traumatizing.
Yeah. And I put my hands on my heart as you were saying that, because I actually saw your post yesterday. My husband and I were out running errands, and it really spoke to me because I've had the same experience, you know, myself as a healer. It's the more you open yourself vulnerably and you share when you have a flare up or something happens on your healing path, right? It's this saviorism, right? That because you're a healer, you are healed. And you know, heavens forbid something happens, it's like, oh, you're not doing this right. Well, here, let me save you. Here's this, right, quick fix. Or have you tried this? Or have you tried that, as you mentioned? And I love how you answered that call, right? I saw your post where you're like, I've been doing this for 30 years. I'm not looking for answers, right? I'm not looking for that, right? Thank you. And something I've tried in my own personal practice, again, in my human design, I'm a projector. I think you posted, I wasn't asking for advice or unsolicited advice. I ask, you know, hey, are you open to receive, you know, some recommendations? Are you open? That is a wound that I share with you as well, because people just get the sense that when you do finally open yourself up and you share that sense of shadow, that people right away want to come and, like you said, that to save you, right? That saviorism. I'm going to be the, you know, the horse on the white knight that's going to save you, instead of, like you said so beautifully, not seeing the medicine within them, right? In that sense, you're dishonoring somebody's own innate ability to recognize their own needs.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, my heart is with you. I resonate with you at the moment. Let's move on to kind of move back from the ancestry to your inner child. So I know as a child, your relatives called you a seer. How did your inner child reflect this?
My goodness, my child self was very, very sensitive. And it was my mother who saw it in my eyes. And then my grandfather said that as well, that I was a seer. And it was a seriousness, I think, to my eyes in the world and my quiet, introspective presence. I think that I'm a projector too. So it might have come out, you know. So I think that as a child, the world was a little bit too much. And I'm not sure today they would call that sensory processing disorder or something, right? It would be like a label of something. But as a child, I just remember feeling things so deeply. Yes. And the energies were just too intense for me. And I remember the world feeling really dense. And I would just kind of, again, go into myself because that was the safest place where I could be. And there would be a lot of thinking and a lot of processing and a lot of intuiting in those moments. So I could see things and I could feel things and I could sense things, but a lot of it was sort of internalized because I didn't quite know what was happening. My mother was a really beautiful space holder for my sensitive nature. She was also a sensitive child. So I think I somehow chose this amazing woman who could guide me in that way, where it was just like she respected my that power that I held and just respected my quiet nature too, that I didn't have to be the one to always speak up or always answer questions. Mm-hmm. She was very good at doing that. So I feel really that I was held in that way, which I'm so grateful for. And I do think that helped me later in life claim my gifts, my medicines, because it was normalized. I wasn't really shamed. I mean, the world somewhat shamed you for being too sensitive, too shy, too quiet. Those are the things I was called all the time. But I had this mother who was holding this as, yes, this is who she is, and she's not going to change. Like, I'm not going to change her. So when I sort of came out in the world with my gifts, it felt natural to express them. And I'm really grateful for that. I'm really grateful for that. I would see spirit at night. I'd have ancestors come in. That freaked me out especially when I got sick. That's when they would show up the most. And it would just be these sort of dark figures and I didn't know who they were. And I've just, my dream time still to this day is just like visions and beings, and nighttime is a lot for me. So those parts haven't really changed much, but as a child, they were really vivid.
And I resonate so deeply with that. I myself, besides being a projector, I'm a highly sensitive soul. Again, I don't like to diagnose that into any sort of way as a label, but I call it sensory overload, right? And I think being a highly sensitive, that is so beautiful that your mother was able to hold space. I wasn't as fortunate in having the same upbringing. It was shamed, right? Unknowingly and unconscious, right? Of course, my parents never meant that. They meant to come from a place of love, but I think it was a lot of society's narrative, right? That being too quiet or being shy, or I remember we'd go to family gatherings or events. My mother, before we walked in, she goes, okay, you're going to put on a smile and a happy face and you're going to talk and you're going to be social. And that was so hard for me because like you, like I was a seer. I took it all in. I was definitely present and I was there, but it was all internalized. I didn't always feel the need and I didn't always feel safe with certain people in the room to open up, to really share what was on my heart and mind. And I sort of just always relied on that felt sense of where and in what rooms I really felt comfortable. And honestly, it wasn't really until the last, you know, 5-6 years of my path as an entrepreneur that I fully evolved into this, because so much of that narrative of actually both extremes, you're too quiet, too shy, too sensitive, and then the you're too much. I've lived in sort of both of two extremes. I know in the notes you mentioned one of your favorite books is a new book called Needy. Mm-hmm. And I actually went and bought a copy last night in preparing for this interview, because on the back of the book, it literally said, if you've ever been called not enough or too much, this book is for you. And that muchness, right? When I finally was able to show up fully as myself, to some people, the perception was muchness. Mm-hmm. And then I sort of retreated back to that sensitive soul that said nothing, not really knowing, right, where, how to feel safe to express my needs. And so I really do feel that. And I think it's beautiful that you had a mother, sort of, again, that mother figure to not have, as a lot of people listening I know do have, that sort of mother wound, right? Where they didn't feel that sense of nurturing as a child. They didn't feel seen. They didn't feel supported. And now that they carry that trauma with them, right, in the adult world, and they're just sort of finding, as you said, it opens you up to spiritual messages, to your angels, to your guides, right, in the dream sense, and sort of seeing your ancestors. I'm just now discovering this the last sort of 5 years of my life. And it's beautiful. It's never too late. You know, I'm 42, so not too far away from you. But anyone younger that's listening, it's like, I wish I had known that it was okay. Because again, a lot of my childhood, it was not normalized. Being sensitive was not normalized. Being just a sensitive soul, being ostracized, being who I was, you know, the seer, the dreamer, the visionary. It was a lot of the narrative of you're unstable because you're not doing what everybody else is doing, right? You're not doing the 9 to 5. You're not doing. And I just, my whole life is just a story of feeling this resistance, which I thought there was something wrong with me. But in becoming an entrepreneur, I found that, no, I'm an outlier for a reason. And that's a really beautiful thing.
Well, I'm so glad you found your path.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much. When did you start to see beyond the physical world? So I know you mentioned as a child, you kind of see that in your dreams, but is there like a defining moment or a time where you remember like, wow, I have this gift?
I think probably the what I shared about being scared, like mm-hmm. I think when spirit would show up at night, and that was happening from when I was really small as well. But I wasn't sure what was going on. So I think the defining moment was when I got sick, when I was 17, and then I went to homeopathy school and I was about 23, and I saw this healer, and she was actually a fellow student, and we did this healing. She was amazing. And she said to me, I said, my nighttime is just so wild. And I was so sick at the time, I remember. And my visions become really strong when I'm going through a flare up. They just become really intense. And I said, this is happening right now, like every night, all night. I don't think I'm resting. And she says, oh, your ancestors are calling to you. They're like so loud and they're so vocal and they want you to wake up. And as soon as she told me that, first of all, it freaked me out again because I would hear them drumming or chanting or singing. And I would just be like, you know, curling up under the blankets. But when I started to really align with that message and connect with them and reconnect with them and know that they are part of my spiritual support system, here to reactivate some teachings, here to teach me, here to protect me and guide me, that really was that defining moment of, oh my goodness, my ancestors are here. And they sort of, you know, felt rooted around that time. And that's the guidance that really led me through much of sort of my healing journey and expanding my gifts. When I started my practice, my private practice, and then becoming more connected to that healer.
That's really beautiful. So dreams kind of is sort of a really resonant for you. What other practices, or maybe there's someone listening that wants to connect in some way or wants to sort of open that portal that they didn't feel safe to do before. How do you recommend someone open up in the sense that they feel that experience of sensory overload, but in a way that's going to feel protective and safe and not be overwhelming, right? As a sensitive soul, sometimes we get overstimulated. What do you think is a good first step?
I think a good first step actually is some nervous system work. I really believe in assessing our capacity because sensory overload, I think, starts from a place of an overloaded nervous system, which I think we all over the last 3 years being in that pandemic time, it's impacted all of us. So I think beautiful things like shaking and breathing practices, all of those things bring us back to a place where I think we can open our capacity to greater connection in all ways, relationally, collectively. You know, it just feels like when you're centered and your nervous system is more calm, then you can connect to those worlds in a little bit easier ways. I love journeying. That has been my main mode of offering my medicine for the last 20 years through circles and workshops and ceremonies, really opening us up to the spirit world and using, you know, when I do a ceremony and I open space, I feel everyone's ancestors there and we're co-creating this journey. And then when I open up space for a journey, then it's sort of like everybody's like intentions come forward and then the energy starts to move. So I think for me, that has been the most potent way to connect to the spirit world. And I've worked with thousands and thousands of folks in this way, even those who can't see, who don't have any like senses, for some reason they get something. So I know it's a portal, the way that I do it. Something is my medicine. It just helps people to connect. And they either feel it in a body way, they see things I've never seen before, they just sense or know things. So that has been the most powerful way to connect. And so I would say like a guided journey that you can listen to, that you can download from somebody, or going to a healing circle where they're going to be doing journeying. And they hold really a sort of brave and safe space. I think those things are really helpful.
That's really beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. And again, nervous system work is really the key part of what I do in trauma healing. So thank you for bringing that to light as a way to, right? That is the opposite of sensory overload, right? Is kind of regulating our nervous system, bringing ourselves back to a sense of, right, ventral safety and kind of coming down that polyvagal ladder with beautiful practices, like you mentioned, like shaking, right? Trauma release exercises or breathing, really just a way to get out of your head and into your body. And then from a sense of the spirit world, I think that's beautiful because that, again, helps us tap into a dimension beyond the mind. Right, a dimension to really, again, connect to our ancestors, to kind of open the portal through, you mentioned, journeying, right, through circles, through ceremonies. And then you have this beautiful gift as well, which people that can't, right, sense that, to be able to sense their ancestors, to sense sort of the medicine within themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I think those are really beautiful starting points. And also, I believe in your medicine. I believe that you know. Right. If this is a desire, then I just feel like if you just open yourself up and say, this is, pray to your ancestors or ask the spirit world how you can be guided to connect to them more deeply, because I think the answers are always there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I want to take a pause if you have a moment to actually practice together with a tool that I use every day to, again, connect, to speak to my ancestors and my spirit guides and my ascended masters, sort of give me answers, because I know having tools are really beautiful as well. Sometimes when we feel lost or we want something tangible, right, to really guide us on the path. And you have, of course, your book, You Are the Medicine, which is a really beautiful tool. But also this deck here, the Sacred Medicine Oracle. And I thought it would be really fun if we could do a collective card reading here on the podcast.
Yes, I love that.
Oh, perfect.
So let's just start with, I actually have a little bit of sage here. I'm going to light it. So let's just start with taking a breath and tuning into perhaps maybe a question you're carrying in your heart, guidance that you're needing, something you're desiring. And we're going to do a three-card reading. We're going to ask where we've come from, where we currently are, and where we're headed. Holding that in your heart, we're going to call upon the ancestors, Nokomis, Mishumis, and all of the beings. We ask for your presence here. We're going to call on the animal beings, the earth, the sky, and all of the directions. Okay. So where we've come from, where we've been, just this is just as of right now. We got the Earth Mother, which is the surrender card. So this card speaks to the sacred practice of really allowing yourself to let go and trust. The Earth Mother is here always to hold us and to transmute everything that we hand over. And even that nervous system practice that we were talking about of just like, can you let the earth rock you and gently kind of connect and mulch everything that you want to release. So perhaps it's been a time of release and spirit saying you can surrender this. Anything that you wanted to let go of, you can trust that as you let go of this and as you surrender this, there is something more aligned that is on its way. So please trust. And Mother Earth is supporting you in that. So feel her beneath you. The current card here, the current energy we got, is the tobacco card, which is the offering card. And this current card speaks of Offering gratitude tobacco is one of our first medicines, and it is the medicine we offer to an elder, a knowledge keeper, or a healer to say thank you and to connect that being to the spirit world so they can be the channel to deliver the information that we need. And right now, you're being offered this or gifted this as an offering for your connection to spirit. So I see it being offered to you. That question you asked me earlier, what are the ways to connect to spirit? This is like opening your channel. So you can imagine this tobacco is being offered to you, and then all of a sudden your channel is being opened and your channel to gratitude is being opened. So right now the message is for you to connect to spirit in a greater way, come from gratitude. Do an offering to the earth, do a blessing, sing a song, you know, beautiful ways of we have our own ways. So gratitude is the gateway to opening yourself up to spirit. And the future card you got was ancestral love, which is the tending card. And this is so beautiful because we were talking about the ancestors gathering around. And I want to remind you that there are many of your ancestors that were not able to live out the dreams that you're currently living out. They were not able to be present in the same way that you are. So they dreamed these dreams within themselves. And then they're dreaming and pouring all that into you, and they're tending to your dreams. So when you feel doubtful, you feel like you're not moving forward fast enough, you worry that you're sort of disoriented or not on the right path, call on their brilliant energy to surround you, because they're tending to that great vision and they are helping you move forward, but you have to ask for help. So those are the three cards that came forward.
So beautiful. Thank you so much for doing that beautiful three-card reading. I just want to reiterate, there's three cards. So where do we come from? The Earth Mother, where we come from, to let go, to trust, right? How can the Earth rock you, hold you, support you, to surrender and trust? Our current card, Tobacco, which actually came up in my reading today. So that gave me goosebumps, the synchronicity today. A tobacco offering, which typically is offered to an elder or a healer, as a thank you. But I love how you sort of flip that and saying, well, it's also an offering to you, right? How do we know that we are guided? How do we know that we're on the right path? And it's sort of thank you from spirit, right? For doing the work, for showing up, and gratitude really being that sort of gateway and that portal to spirit, which is really beautiful. And then ancestral love, which every time I get that card, it brings me goosebumps because I can sort of feel my ancestors present with me. And I love how each one of your cards, those listening may not know, in her deck, there's a specific ritual that goes with each one of the cards, like a visualization. And in that one, I love sort of just envisioning all of my ancestors and my spirit guides sort of surrounding me, like around a fire and ceremony and just praising me and lifting me. And even if they passed at a really young age or I didn't get to know a lot of my ancestors, we've had a lot of loss before I was even age of three, but just I can still feel their presence, even though I didn't really know who they are. It's sort of maybe my past life coming to present. So
that's beautiful. I love that you chose the same card out of all the 56 cards.
Yeah, that's really, really beautiful. And I actually use this deck every day. I switch it up, but the sacred medicine ever since I was gifted that from Hay House, it's just something I feel resonant with as a daily practice. So this is not a deck out of my rotation yet. Even the artistry on the cards are really, really beautiful. And of course, the little rituals that go with it, I always sort of close my eyes and really feel into the card. Because I know even with some of my clients that read, you know, Oracle and Tarot, or even I read for them, a lot of the blockages is like, well, that sounds great, but I don't really feel that for my life. What is a practice or a sign or some type of synchronicity? Like I feel that and I can feel my ancestors with me and sort of feel the resonance of the cards. But what is a way that you recommend someone to help them sort of connect deeper to the energy of the cards or the messages they receive they may not be aware of?
Yeah, well, when I created it, I really created it with the intention, like activating each card and each word with the vibration of feeling it, because that's how I tend to be, again, with our sensory existence in the world. I tend to read something and the things that speak to me the most are the things that I feel take up space in my cells and my waters. So mm-hmm. I intended it to be that. So if you're having trouble or there's a block and you're not feeling that or it's not coming through, First of all, have compassion. There's nothing wrong with you, you know. But perhaps just asking, what would feel like, how can I bring safety to my body? And how can I bring safety to this experience? Like, maybe you want to light a candle. Maybe you want to take a salt bath. Maybe you want to go for a walk outside before you pull the cards. But just maybe bringing a little bit more safety and more sacred space to that experience, so that the capacity to open up to the full experience might be available to you if you provide yourself with that. But again, I don't think you're doing anything wrong if you don't feel that. I just know that that was my intention. So I'm so grateful for all the folks that have reflected that back to me, that somehow they feel it in their bodies, because that was so important. And something else sometimes I do too in circle with them is I do have the people hold it to their heart. Like, they'll hold their card or hold it to their third eye or hold it to their throat, hold it to their belly, right? Just ask for that medicine to infuse into your sacred waters and your cells. I do believe they are infused with that intention. So I hope that it works.
Oh, it definitely works, because I've definitely held it to my heart or to whatever chakra, right? Really, really needs healing. And feeling that resonance, feeling that frequency, feeling it. I love how you said taking up space in your cells, right? And in the waters within you, right? We are 70% water. But also bringing to light the compassion side of it, right? Not every day do I feel connected to the cards, right? And it's not that there's anything wrong with me or my intuitive abilities. Sometimes we're just, you know, having one of those days, or maybe we're experiencing pain, or maybe we're just having a day of sensory overload. And that's okay too. But sometimes just the reading, the remembering, that kind of helps activate, right? That sort of subconscious state, and helps us reconnect back to spirit. Even if we're not feeling it, I always say sometimes even just playing a meditation in the background, even if you're not meditating, your cells are picking up that frequency in your subconscious mind. And so that's why I pull regardless of how I'm feeling that day. And it still has the same magic.
Oh, that's so beautiful. And it's true, because I think that's so, we should normalize that we're not spiritual beings or healers or teachers or leaders. We're not always in that space of being on, right? And we have to normalize the cycles of our lives. Like, it's so important, because what we see on social media is so sanitized, and it looks like we're just always up and we're always on and we're always connected and we're always intuitive. And that's just not true.
No, definitely not true, right? We're not the savior. We're not always the healer. We ebb and flow, right? Just like nature. And that's another resonant theme in your cards that I love so much, is that connection to the earth, connection to nature, right? And nature has storms, right? Nature has cycles. Nature has seasons. And so I think just knowing that always helps me remember to honor that rhythm, you know, wherever I am in that day, and not be like social media, right? Like you said, sanitized. I think that's a really good way to explain it, and to know that at the end of the day, we're all just human. We're all humans having the same experience, wanting the same desires, and that's okay.
So true.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, I know we have just a few more moments. I want to be respectful of your time, but I want to end with a few rapid fire questions. If you have another 5 minutes, Asha, I really, really appreciate and respect your time today. How did you receive, or did you receive, guidance to write your book and the Oracle deck? Were there any channeled messages that you received that inspired?
Goodness, I think the whole thing was channeled. It was all channeled. And the reason I know that is because I couldn't write without having a candle and some smudge burning. So I really asked and I prayed for my ancestors to help me. And when I had a writer's block, it was because there was an energy block that I needed to actually go see somebody to get assistance with. So when the channel was shut down, there was a reason for that. So they were all channeled. And I do feel like I have these guides called the grandmothers that came in, especially for the deck, that came in and surrounded me to write those messages.
The grandmothers, I love that. Out of all my ancestors, my mom always says, she goes, you're just like both of your grandmothers. And so when I hear the word the grandmothers is the guides, like, my grandmothers are my guides. And I actually have pictures of them on my altar as well. To always remember that, just like you said, their dreams were not accomplished in their life. And so to me, it's really a blessing to be able to carry this lineage and to hopefully live out their dreams, and that they're with me and watching me as I do that and still feeling that within themselves.
Yes,
Really beautiful. All right. What is your greatest hope for the world with the work that you do as an Indigenous medicine healer?
I think it's what we already spoke about, is that you see that you're not broken and that you see that you're already whole. And perhaps the pieces that are coming back to you are just pieces that need to be reclaimed and remembered. But yes, you are not broken. You are whole. And also, I think from an Indigenous perspective, I want the Indigenous youth to know that they are worthy of their dreams. That's really important.
That's really beautiful. Yeah. So the Indigenous youth, they're worthy of their dreams, and that you are not broken, right? Just areas to be reclaimed and remembered. All right. What quote inspires your life and work? Or a mantra?
Goodness, I think it's the title of my book. I think it's
You Are the Medicine.
And primarily because I think I have always, well, not always, but you know, we talked about doctors or the medical system and or handing our power over to healers, to teachers, to like people that we put on pedestals. Yes. It's been my own journey to remember my medicine in those moments when they've fallen or things have broken up or broken apart, that it just returns me back to that. So You Are the Medicine is, maybe it's I Am the Medicine is the guiding phrase.
I love that. I am the medicine. I'm going to proclaim that right now. What book or books, you can mention your own, has changed your life? Or any recommend?
Goodness, there's so many. It's I tend to read a lot or listen to a lot of some Audible books. I think writing my book changed my life, so I can say that for sure. Reading Sweetgrass is a favorite from an Indigenous writer. My dear friend Caitlin Curtis has just released a book, and her book is so beautiful, Living Resistance. And you mentioned Needy. You know, I loved that book. I think when we connected, that was a beautiful book too. But there's so many books that changed my life depending on where I was in my sort of journey.
Really beautiful. All right. Lastly, being the Alive podcast, what makes you, Asha Frost, come alive?
Oh my goodness. Dancing, singing, giggling with my children. Being at the ocean is one of the things that make me feel so alive. So I think if I danced and sang and lived by the ocean, then I'd be the most alive.
Oh, really, really beautiful. Well, thank you so much. How can we stay connected to you? Where can we find you?
So on Instagram is asha.frost and is ashafrost.com is my website. So I would love to see you over there in either of those spots.
Perfect. I will link all that up in the show notes, listeners. Asha, thank you so much. Immense gratitude. A tobacco offering for you, for your time, your energy, and your beautiful Indigenous wisdom and tradition today, and for bringing that to this podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been good.
If you enjoyed this episode, I invite you to share the love with somebody in your world that really needs this message today. And if you're feeling extra generous, I would absolutely love if you would subscribe to my show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen and rate and review. Interested to know how this show has helped you come alive.